This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And online at SBNationLive.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
And we are rocking again on Monday night. Carla, welcome back.
Thank you, David. So good to be here. You always energize me on Monday nights. Here we go.
Well,
way to start the week.
Some call it Black Panther Monday. Black Panther set all kinds of records at the movie theaters this weekend. I'm sure you were there.
I was Fergie-licious this weekend.
Fergie-licious.
All in on All-Star, yes.
So
All-Star weekend.
You sat and watched and smiled and listened to everything Fergie had to say, did you not?
You know, I am a big Fergie fan. And yes, that was tough last night. I'm just going to admit.
Oh, so for a fan, you were worried for her.
Not at the beginning. She walks out. She's looking great. The dress. She's rocking the dress. And woo.
Oh, is that you singing right now?
Thank the Lord, no.
It reminds me a little bit of that Marilyn Monroe rendition, Happy Birthday, Mr. President.
And Santa Baby National Anthem.
She had it. The best part was the NBA players who were smiling, giggling, holding back. You could see on their faces. They didn't really know what to do with this.
Steph Curry looks like he'd seen a ghost. that might have been my favorite. I know Draymond's getting all the Twitter love because he was trying to look like he was into it, and then he just burst out laughing. But Steph Curry saw a ghost. It was too funny.
Well, so many of them were swaying, and you could tell they were having trouble standing still for that long. It might be a record duration for the national anthem, was it not? Ron, you keep track of these sorts of records.
But I think we need to listen to the ending of it right here. This
here comes the end.
Favorite.
All right, a moment of silence. Wow.
Ooh, you know what made me sad about that?
Tell me.
I mean, yes, there was a lot of giggling going on. When she hit that last note, she looked like she just nailed the perfect 10 routine. And I wanted to say, oh, shoot. She does not realize.
Hey, when in doubt, just celebrate a win.
That's right. Hey, A for game face.
All right, this is the Boston the Gloss on SB Nation Radio. And when we come back, we're going to look at the thawing of the MLB free agent signings on the Boston the Gloss SB Nation.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
So it's not every week we have breaking news as we enter into the show, and there is breaking news. The Red Sox, the Boston Red Sox, have come to terms with J.D. Martinez, the free agent from the Tigers and the Diamondbacks most recently. The Red Sox signed him to a 5-year deal worth $110 million. That's a big deal for the Red Sox. They needed him. But it also is a big deal for MLB. Is there needed to be a thawing of these free agents who are just out there waiting for a team?
One of the big ticket guys is off the list now.
This is another one. So about a week ago, we were talking about Yu Darvish. He was signed by the Cubs. Theo Epstein signed him to a pretty rich deal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Interesting deal with Yu Darvish, because what that does is leaves Jake Arrieta as a pitcher that's a huge free agent signing that's still out there. I think what was fascinating with what the Cubs did is signing Darvish to a long-term deal, 6 years, $126 million. I think they overpaid for him, because look what they're doing. They went out to a sixth year to lock up a pitcher that's coming off a terrible World Series.
Yep.
Lost Game 3, lost Game 7, not to mention that he tipped his pitches on baseball's biggest stage. At, 31 years old or whatever he is, he should know not to tip pitches at this point. I do think he is very capable of ace-like stuff, but he's lacking consistency. And what they did by going out to get Yu Darvish, that 6-year deal, they're losing Arrieta, because Cubs aren't going to keep him now, who is a 2015 Cy Young Award winner, a World Series champ. He could have had a 6-year deal with the Cubs. He wanted about $26.5 million a year, which was a big deal. But instead, they signed Darvish for 6 years at $126 million. I think they overpaid.
Well, I agree with you. I don't know what Theo Epstein was looking at there. The one optimistic thought might be, well, yes, if his problem was tipping pitches, that might be a quick fix and Darvish could return to form. But he was one of the two big pitchers on the market, Arrieta the other.
Mm-hmm. And Arrieta's still there now.
Yes, Arrieta's still hanging out there. Now, that was a week ago. This week, Eric Hosmer signed with the Padres on a long-term deal, 8 years, wow. A lot of money. That was a big deal for the Padres.
That was a big deal. I mean, 8 years. That is $144 million. It's the largest contract the Padres have ever given. And it is an 8-year deal, but a 5-year opt-out clause, which is interesting. What is also interesting is that Hosmer had, now he's a Boris client as well.
Yep.
As are most of these big free agents, J.D. Martinez, Jake Arrieta. He had 2 7-year offers in the $140 million range from Kansas City to stay there and from San Diego. But Boris clients, typically, Boris wants an 8-year deal for his guys. So he got it. But honestly, he would have had the same dollars with a 7-year deal. I don't know. I find it a little bit interesting. But it is the richest deal in franchise history for San Diego, and it would have been for Kansas City, too.
All right, that brings us up to today and the announcement the Red Sox get J.D. Martinez, 5 years, $110 million. And actually, when you look at those economics, I think it's a pretty team-friendly deal.
I do, too.
It just wasn't that long ago there were whispers in the media that, in fact, Boris was asking for a deal in the, well, perhaps a term of 7 years and perhaps over $200 million. Red Sox get him for 5 years and $110 million. It seems in this case the team won the negotiation.
They did win it. I completely agree. Because Boris had promised J.D. Martinez, or this is what's out on the street, a $200 million payday. He didn't get close to that. And, you know, I think Boston offered him $125 million to begin with. And I mean, they have settled lower than that. So, yes, I totally agree. And Boston, you know what? They need his power. They were last in Major League Baseball in home runs at 17 last year. So they need his power. And believe it or not, they really got the better deal. They got his power and they got the number lower than what they had originally offered him.
Well, you mentioned the Red Sox need the power. They hit 168 home runs, and that was 73 fewer than the Yankees. And the Yankees have added Stanton to the lineup. So there was a real power gap between the Red Sox and the Yankees.
Wow, that's huge.
So Martinez has been a corner outfielder for a chunk of his career. With the Red Sox, he probably slides in as a DH. I bet they line him up as the number 4 hitter in their lineup. They've really not had the power that, well, they were accustomed to in the days of David Ortiz and before that Ortiz and Ramirez, Manny Ramirez. So they really needed somebody to come in and play the heavy-hitting DH role in the number 4 place in their lineup. The other interesting question about the Red Sox is, what does this mean for Hanley Ramirez? So Ramirez has come over. They signed him to a big deal, lots of money at stake, and Ramirez has not performed well. His game has tapered off. He was planning on getting a lot of the DH hits this year. Now Martinez will take them. And Martinez, at best, is going to get to platoon with Mitch Moreland at first and then occasionally serve as the DH. But it's a sensitive topic with Hanley Ramirez because he needs this year 497 plate appearances to trigger a $22 million option for 2019.
Yeah. So pressure's on.
Yeah, the Red Sox, by signing J.D. Martinez, yeah, what they really have done is they've almost made it, unless there's an injury of some kind, what they've done by signing Martinez is they've made it so they won't have to spend $22 million in 2019. The player option won't get exercised. He won't get the plate appearances. So Hanley Ramirez is probably going to be in his final year with the Red Sox, and that will be a big relief to get him off the books.
Wow, that's fascinating. So it gives the Red Sox power, but it also is a great business decision for them to get them out of that extra incentive.
Yeah, that will be it for Hanley probably this year. But the Red Sox lineup then looking really good. It will start with Mookie Betts, Adrian Benintendi, Bogarts, then comes J.D. Martinez. They've got Rafael Devers, the third baseman, Mitch Moreland, Jackie Bradley, Christian Vasquez, and Marco Hernandez, the second baseman who's filling in for Dustin Pedroia, will likely bat ninth. Pedroia will be back after about 6 weeks. So that lineup looks much, much better with Martinez in the middle of it.
And a rookie manager in Alex Cora.
and former a rookie Astros manager. Bench coach. Notably, the manager is a guy who believes in hitting the ball up and hitting with getting some lift on the ball. And that's something that really turned J.D. Martinez's career around. He was not an impressive power hitter for a number of years, but in the last few years, he's been exceptional.
Well, good. It's all in Alex Cora. He's got the people. You know, it has been fascinating, though, this whole season or off season that has been pretty stagnant in Major League Baseball. You look at it from so many different perspectives. You've got the teams. Like today, you've got Kansas City. Their players are reporting, and there went their first baseman on the day they're reporting. So that puts them in a really tough position, even though they were unsure that where Hosmer would end up. Then you've got the player's perspective. Sitting there, these free agents like Jake Arrieta, he's still out there. And then you've got the agents, Scott Boras, saying, this might be collusion, this and that. There are so many different pieces, and all of them have great legs to stand on the frustration with this offseason.
Now, one of the most intriguing stories, we were talking about it before, is Shohei Ohtani.
Oh, yeah, the Japanese Babe Ruth.
Yes, the Japanese Babe Ruth. He's a two-way phenomenon, right? I mean, he can hit, he can pitch, and he's going to the Angels. He's very interesting to watch.
He is so interesting. He's very young at 23 years old. But what is the most fascinating to me, he signed for $3 million with the Angels. $3 million. Listen to the numbers that we're talking about today for all these people.
Yep.
Had Shohei waited another 2 years, he would have aged out of the international signing system and would have been able to sign for $200 million plus to come to the United States.
Timing is everything.
But here's what's interesting about Shohei. He doesn't really care about the money. That's not his focus. Have you heard of any athlete who doesn't really care about the money?
No.
And honestly, I love it because it says to me, this athlete in Shohei Ohtani, he is just grateful to be playing the sport that he loves and being able to be paid for it. Now, in a way, I also think, are you crazy, buddy? $3 million versus a $200 million plus contract. But there's something refreshing about you are getting paid to play your passion. So I wish the best for him. And he's joining a team with Mike Trout, you know, multiple-time MVP, and Albert Pujols. That's an interesting situation because he has been the DH for the Angels. And he's got 4 more years left on his contract. The Angels are going to owe him $114 million. And last year's WAR was a negative 1.8 for Albert Pujols.
Well, they say he's working on getting back into shape. He really needs to turn himself around.
What a good idea.
Well, given the money he's making.
Sure.
But it would really be exciting. It's almost like when Deion Sanders played both offense and defense. It would really be exciting if somebody actually pitched and hit. Because you've got 5 days between starts. Surely there's a chance to do some at least pinch hitting, if not DH play, in that lineup.
And this is the American League we're talking about, where pitchers do not bat, typically. But this guy, he's going to do it. I mean, in the National League, we see the pitchers do it,
sure,
but they don't do it well.
Right.
This guy is the star, so I can't wait to see
him.
And, you know, he's got a lot. Boy, media follows him everywhere he goes. He is a phenom. So it's going to be fun to watch.
Very exciting to watch. And a great MLB season coming up soon. And the thaw is underway in free agency. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to get a chance to visit with former University of Houston coach Tom Penders. And we'll ask him, what is going on this college basketball season? Loads of parity, loads of upsets. Tom Penders will answer it all when we return.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's David Gow and Carla Dawson.
When it gets cold out there, your vehicle needs some extra attention. O'Reilly Auto Parts has everything you need to keep your vehicle toasty warm, from choosing the right antifreeze for your engine to replacing your windshield wiper blades. O'Reilly will help you get your car or truck in fighting shape for the cold weather ahead. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Well, joining us now on SB Nation Radio is former college basketball coach, and the University of Houston was one of his stops, Tom Penders. Welcome to the show, Tom.
Oh, I'm glad to be with you.
Well, great to have you. You're on with David Gow and Carla Dawson. And let me just start by saying, look, we've seen since he lose last week, Texas Tech, ups and downs, Auburn was upset. Is anyone safe? Is this just a year of parity?
Well, I know people don't want to hear it, but, you know, I watch it very closely and try to compare the different teams from across the country, and so much will depend on matchups and style of play. You know, a three-point shooting team that has a great three-point shooting game can knock off anybody in college basketball today. You're seeing teams out-rebound by 15 rebounds in a game and still winning. It's happening at the pro level, and it's happening at the college level. The three-point shot has changed the game even more than I thought it would. When you have guys like Mike D'Antoni, you know, ruling the roost now in the NBA along with Golden State, and they play the same exact way. They can call one inside out, outside in. All I know is watching the Houston Rockets, those guys are amazing. Yeah, they're fun to watch. Even on a rough night, they're going to hit 100, 105. That's good. I think it's great for the sport, and it's influenced college basketball. You're seeing scores in the 90s and hundreds, and you didn't see this 5 years ago. People are mastering the three-point shot. They realize it means a lot in the game, and I think coaches are finally grudgingly learning how to use it.
No, you're so right, Tom. I love your comparison of Golden State and what Mike D'Antoni has done in Houston. And Mike D'Antoni had a lot of rough years and was losing jobs when no one was really believing in that system. And when he stuck with it and got the right people who could execute it, it's all the rage in the NBA, and you're right, spilling over into college. But let's take a look at the shape you left your U of H Cougars in, Tom. Wow. One spot out of first place in the AAC, and big, big win over Cincinnati, following it up with a win against Temple. Tell me about the job you think Kelvin Sampson's doing and how far you think these guys can go into the tournament.
Well, first, I love the way the team is playing. I've watched every game that's been on television, either live or a tape version. Kelvin is a good friend of mine, one of the closest coaches in the NCAAs. We had a big rivalry when I was at Texas and he was at Oklahoma, but he stuck up for me in tough times, and I always stuck up for him. And he's the perfect guy. You know, he had NBA experience, which certainly helps his coaching. I watch they run a lot of NBA stuff and a lot of things that the Houston Rockets win. They spread the floor. They'll shoot the three. They run. And Galen Robinson, their point guard, is a very, very smart point guard. And he realizes his job is to distribute the ball, get it to the hot shooters, and he does an excellent job of that. And you've got even Rob Gray, the high scorer from the last couple of years, he's sacrificing, making a lot of assists in games, and the Davis guys, the Davis guard and the Davis big guy inside. They are a great combination. You have a mid-range game from the bigger Davis and a great outside game from the smaller Davis. They're a fun team to watch. And then they'll rotate in like three big guys. And, you know, sometimes I look and I say, man, I haven't seen that guy in a couple of games. And Kelvin will put him in. And the guy will go nuts. He'll get like 12 points and 8 rebounds and a half. And I root for him. You know, I whenever I'm in the Houston area, I try to stop by practice or a game. And now the excitement of the team and a new arena coming. You know, now there's a really strong commitment to it, and they've got the perfect guy, a guy who feels he has something to prove. And when he took the job, I said that, you know, Kelvin Sampson is probably the best coach in college basketball that's not in college basketball. He was with the Houston Rockets as an assistant, and there are a lot of ties between the Houston Rockets and the University of Houston, you know, with Clyde Drexler and Akeem Olajuwon as players and some of their front office people over the years. There's a good relationship there. And, you know, it's good to see. The city of Houston was, you know, not known as a basketball area back in the late 80s when I got to Texas, but it certainly is now. And my son is a very successful high school coach in Houston. It's in the Clear Lake area, but it's in the city limits. And he has a playoff game tomorrow night. They go in with a 29-5 record, and he's got a couple of the Division I kids on his team. So,
like father, like son, it sounds like.
Yeah, he did some college work with me, and he was with Jim Herrick at Rhode Island when they went to the Elite Eight, and just decided he wanted to be a high school coach. And that's how my dad was a high school coach. And he has two cousins in coaching. So we are a coaching family, but it started with my dad.
Well, the top down sounds pretty good. We are on with Tom Penders, legendary NCAA coach, lover of all Houston basketball. Tom, I love your mention of Kelvin Sampson and how, you know, he'll just put in a player that you haven't really seen much of, and he just lights it up, and which really tells me the importance of a coach, especially in college, as compared to the NBA. It's obviously different. Lon Kruger at Oklahoma has got the most probable player of the year in Trae Young. Trae has really hit a rough patch. You know, he's gotten a lot of criticism for his turnovers, the amount of shots he takes, this and that. Do you think it's the job of Lon Kruger to really help him get out of his own head and turn his game around?
Well, we all try as coaches, but sometimes I was a big believer in getting sports psychologists involved. Dr. Fran Pirozzolo, pretty renowned guy. He has four New York Yankee rings. He worked with a lot of their players during, you know, the Joe Torre run years.
Oh, that's and their worked, secret sauce. Sports.
Yeah, and he lived in Houston, but we were all friends from back east. And he worked with our kids when I was at Houston. And did a terrific job. And I think more and more coaches are using sports psychologists because, you know, success comes with hard work. And in college, they're going to figure out a way to stop you. And when you're a smaller guy, it's a lot tougher on you. The easiest guy to shut down, in my opinion, is the point guard, because he starts off the offense with the ball. So you can early trap him to get the ball out of his hands. You can do a lot of different things to rattle him, where if he's a two-guard, a scorer, you know, you can run him off double staggered screens and send him around that, and curling along the baseline, where his man is getting banged with screens all over the place. And finally, when the guy is laying on the floor, your shooting guard's going to be open. Sure. But Trae is a phenomenal little basketball player. I think he just has to trust his teammates and work on just catching and shooting open shots.
He will get there. We appreciate Tom Penders on SB Nation Radio.
This is the Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Well, we've covered a lot of ground quickly today.
Wow, we're moving and shaking, goodness, and I like it.
I mean, we had the big breaking news. The Red Sox have signed J.D. Martinez, probably the best hitter on the market, goes to the Red Sox, slides into that cleanup spot for them. We got the chance to talk to Tom Pender's U of H
legendary
college basketball coach on all things NCAA. Let's shift gears now to the NFL. There is a new quarterback on the market, at least new since we went on the air last week. A.J. McCarron has hit the market. He is a free agent. And so now Kirk Cousins and A.J. McCarron are out there, along with all three Viking quarterbacks. There's a big number of quarterbacks available. How do you see A.J. McCarron fitting into this pool of quarterbacks?
I see him being signed with a big fat P. You know, you love P words?
I love the P word.
Potential.
Potential.
He really doesn't have a body of work in the NFL. He's been 4 years with Cincinnati as Andy Dalton's backup, and we've seen him start three games. I mean, it's four games, and I think he started three of them. That's really not a big body of work, and it just is fascinating to me. He won this big arbitration ruling this week that makes him an unrestricted free agent.
Yes, but my reaction to that was there was way too much made of this. Remember, this is a guy who was a game manager at Alabama.
Yeah.
He was a fifth-round pick, not a highly touted prospect coming out of college. And then he's just the backup with the Bengals. And now all of a sudden, A.J. McCarron fever has broken.
I think the answer to that is, why would teams look at him with this limited body of work? Simple answer. He is a quarterback.
Mm.
It's crazy because, you know, but here's where, you know, where he might end up fitting well. But it's really kind of a quarterback graveyard is Cleveland. Because he worked with Hugh Jackson when Hugh Jackson was the OC at Cincinnati, and they worked well together in A.J. McCarron's four starts over 4 years. And there's Hugh Jackson in Cleveland, and they apparently like each other. I don't know.
Well, you do remember the trade that was meant to be, the trade didn't happen.
Yes, Cleveland was going to give up a second and a third round pick at the trade deadline for McCarron, but oops, they missed the deadline for that paperwork in such a Clevelandy Brownsy type of way.
Yes, but it was the best thing for them. They would have given up too much. The botch was a good move.
It was
in a strange sort of way,
right?
At least in my opinion.
And they've got everything. They've got money. They've got draft picks. They've got a lot of things. And maybe A.J. McCarron. Well, I mean, Hugh Jackson is a great guy. But wow, when you look at a 1-31 record in 2 years, is that what you want to step into? Yet if you're the savior of that, good for you. But he was the quarterback at Alabama before we talked about Alabama quarterbacks, i.e. before Jalen Hurts and Tua, you know, Tua, that I can't pronounce.
Just say Tua. It's like Madonna. There's no last name.
Yeah, Tua is just enough. And the way he played in the national championship game, Tua, he doesn't need a last name.
Tua is an exclamation point. It's an expression of itself.
It's so good.
It's onomatopoeia. It's beautiful.
It is beautiful. But when McCarron was at Alabama,
yes,
I think you mentioned this, he was a game manager, and that's all Alabama needed at that point. So I don't know. This, to me, is not the same as the Garoppolo body of work when San Francisco brought him in.
Not at all.
This is a totally different deal.
Interestingly, when you look at the quarterback pool now, there are the three Vikings, Bridgewater, Bradford, and Keenum. There's A.J. McCarron and, of course, Kirk Cousins, who's probably the class of that group. And then there'll likely be five or six rookies drafted in the first round. Josh Allen, Sam Darnold, Josh Rosen, Baker Mayfield, Lamar Jackson, Mason Rudolph, all who could go in the first round.
Gosh, that's a lot.
So you really got 11 names there.
And a lot of good talent.
Yes,
really
a lot. I mean, that's about 11 names of quarterbacks who are going to find a home somewhere between now and training camp. 11 names. I mean, that's a big number of quarterbacks coming to the market.
And you're not even thinking about the names of like Tyrod Taylor, who is probably not going to be retained in Buffalo. And, you know, Josh McCown with the Jets, he may be moving on. I mean, you know, there's names that they're probably not going to be on their rosters when the season starts.
Sure.
When training camp starts.
Well, particularly when you think about where some of these guys might land. So let's go to Kirk Cousins for a minute. A lot of speculation on where he'll go. He's probably the first domino to fall. Once he goes, then everyone else will scramble and fill up.
Sure.
Where do you see Kirk Cousins landing and why?
The best spot that I think for Kirk Cousins is the New York Jets.
The Jets?
They've got the trifecta. They have, number one, a need.
Yep.
They really need a consistent quarterback. Number two, they have the right scheme for him. He fits very well into their offensive scheme. And then they have plenty of cash. Lots of money to pay this guy, $73 million in cap space. And they have the ability to front load a contract for Cousins, which not these other contenders do, like Jacksonville, for example. I'm sorry to tell the Jacksonville fans, the only way that they could land Cousins would be to get rid of Bortles. They have every other piece.
That's okay. Get rid of Bortles then.
I know. You and I are okay with that. But I don't think that Bortles did enough to lose that job in Jacksonville, and he didn't do enough to take them to the promised land. So they're in a bit of Bortles purgatory
Imagine for a minute, Bortles gone, Cousins in Jacksonville.
They're a lock to win the AFC.
They would have everything.
They would have everything. That would be the dream scenario. That's actually, I think, would be the best place for him. The most likely place for him, I think, is the Jets.
Okay, so I don't believe that Jacksonville will make that move either.
Right.
But I actually think that John Elway, the Broncos, are going to figure out a way to get Kirk Cousins. They do need a quarterback. It looks like they've given up on Paxton Lynch. Simeon's gone. Mm-hmm. They're going to go get somebody, and Cousins could slide in as a veteran.
You don't like Brock in Denver?
Oh, my goodness.
No, Brock the Rock?
We're not going with Brock. Yeah. The only mystery to me in Denver is it time to completely give up on Paxton Lynch in that he's been injured most of his first 2 years?
He hasn't been given a fair chance.
How many games have we seen him play? It's really a quick rush to judgment. So the idea of signing Cousins and keeping Lynch as a backup and developing Lynch, maybe he just takes a little bit longer, seems like a good strategy for me if I were running the Broncos.
No, it is a good strategy. Here's where it gets tricky. The challenge for Denver is cap space. They don't have enough. So they would have to get rid of some expensive pieces to make cap space for Cousins. And Cousins has made it clear that he wants to go to a contender. He doesn't want to go to a Cleveland right now and try and rebuild this. So the challenge for John Elway, general manager in Denver, is keeping the roster strong enough to be able to succeed under Cousins. Because you've got to get rid of some expensive pieces to make that cap space. That's tricky. And that's the same deal with Arizona, who is also in need of a quarterback. They only have a $17 million of cap space available, and it's kind of the same. They would have to move people. And when you move the people to create that cap space enough for Cousins, you've moved key pieces off your roster.
Well, and one thing about Arizona, they have a limited budget, as you said, not a lot to spend. And therefore, McCarron might be the fit there. I don't think McCarron's going to go for max dollars. He's just not a guy that you can pay like a franchise quarterback at this stage in his career.
No, but you look at like a Mike Glennon.
Yep.
Who signed, you know, a $45 million 3-year deal with Chicago last year. And wow, so even big money is still big money in the NFL, which is crazy. And you think in Arizona, Larry Fitzgerald, so exciting that he's coming back for another year. But you're not going to get many more years out of Larry Fitzgerald, many more good productive years. He's getting up there in age.
Yep.
And so you want to maximize that. And maybe A.J. McCarron is the guy for that. But gosh, Kirk Cousins to Larry Fitzgerald is a beautiful thing. However, let's say you only have Fitzgerald for 1 year. Then who is Cousins throwing to?
Mm-hmm.
So tricky. But I'm saying he'll land with the New York Jets. Wish he would land with Jacksonville. Although I am a Texans fan, and that would mess up my AFC South division for sure.
So. Well, your AFC South division suddenly to me looks pretty tough.
What in the world? That's a big turnaround. I love it.
They were always the weakest division in football, it seemed, over the last
few
years.
Yeah.
And here in Houston, there was a lot of pounding our fist on our chest about winning the AFC South, but that was
at 9-7.
That was like being the fastest turtle. It was not a big deal, right? At 9-7, you win the AFC South. But look at the AFC South now. Look, if Luck comes back, the Colts will be viable. They'll be good if Luck can return to form.
Frank Reich is going to be like going to fortune tellers. He needs Andrew Luck to come back, and he needs an injury-free season from Luck.
Yep.
Not just him being there. He needs sustaining power with Luck for Indy to be successful. But what's so fascinating is that I think the AFC South, looking at it now without a snap being taken, they're definitely going to be looked at as the most improved division in football. They could possibly be one of the top, and that has not happened in the AFC South in a lot of years.
Well, go down the rosters. I mean, they would be one of the – look, let's look at the Texans for
with all these newbies in the head coaching positions.
Two new head coaches. They've got – here in Houston, it will largely rest on Deshaun Watson if he can return to health and play at the level at which he was playing before, prior to the injury, that team is a contender. They've got a great defense. The Texans are poised to make a run with Watson at quarterback.
Yeah, they went from first to worst in 1 year. Texans did. So Bill O'Brien signed a five-year extension. He's entering year five. He's the veteran in this division, which is fascinating. But you're exactly right. For Houston to be successful, they've got to have Deshaun Watson pick up right where he left off. They've got to have health to their key players. That's JJ. That's Whitney Merciless. That's Deshaun. And they need a total overhaul on their O-line and their secondary. I like Malcolm Butler in Houston. Bring him on.
Really?
I'm going to be bold. Yes.
Well, one guy we know will not be with the Texans, it looks like, is Brian Cushing. Brian Cushing.
Yeah, and unfortunately, he worked himself out of a job. His second 10-game suspension, well, not second 10-game suspension, but second suspension for performance-enhancing drugs. Not a good deal. Come on. And I'm sad to lose him. He's a fellow Trojan and long tenure with the Texans at 9 years. But you know what? You can't do that at this level. We have needs that are too great.
So O'Brien, the longest standing coach in the AFC South. Frank Reich steps into the Colts. Mike Vrabel comes into Tennessee, and he inherits a team with some resources too. There's some talent there.
They were had the best record in the AFC South last year at 5-1, and he inherits some really good talent. He's going to need Marcus Mariota to be healthy.
Yep,
and he's got Derrick Henry, and you know they beat Kansas City, Tennessee did, and then lost to the Patriots in the playoffs. I mean, that's a good run for Tennessee. So
then fired their coach.
Poor Mike Mularkey. I mean, wow. I don't know how many people get fired after winning a playoff game. It's a bit unusual, but he did manage to have that happen. I hope good success for Mike Vrabel. He's a great guy, and he'll be missed in Houston. But, you know, the second oldest guy is entering year two, and Doug Marrone, and look what he did with Jacksonville.
Yeah.
Wow.
No, he deserves a lot of credit, particularly what he did with Blake Bortles down the stretch.
Came within one game of the Super Bowl.
Well, they exceeded expectations, and then Bortles exceeded expectations. So, yes, the Jaguars are poised. I mean, they've got a lot of talent. It always just comes back to that big question at quarterback.
It really does, because they've got an incredible running game with led by Leonard Fournette, outstanding defense. And their one issue is the consistency of Blake Bortles.
Okay, one more NFL note. I'm going to give you a chance to talk about your beloved Raiders.
Oh, my God.
For those who don't know, Carla wears Prince silver and black. Darkness. It's the only thing she ever wears.
Turn off your mic right now.
What's that? No.
I'm going to turn off your mic. You cannot say
Ron is going to. He's going to not let me brag on my boys.
Well, there's no bragging here. It's actually a goodbye.
Well, that's true. There
is an emotional goodbye. Sebastian Janikowski.
Bye-bye, little Sebastian.
One of the great names in football.
It
a great that. Kicker.
18 seasons in Oakland.
Remarkable. And he was a first-round draft pick. You don't see that often with kickers.
No, you don't. He'll be a Hall of Famer.
No
All
doubt in your mind.
All-time leader in Oakland for games played and points scored.
Another Hall. You hear that, Ron? Yeah. Another Raider Hall of Famer.
I got to give it to the kicker.
Eat your heart out.
He's done some amazing things.
Well, he has. So I believe the first Hall of Fame kicker ever, the great Jan Stenerud.
Where did you pull that one out of? That's impressive.
Isn't that amazing? He was number three. He was really one of the first soccer-style kickers ever. I probably – well, this will only mean something in Houston, but I learned that from Barry Warner. So he's a
Texas Radio Hall of Famer.
Texas Radio Hall of Famer and a guy who knows all of the history of the NFL. Anyway, Jan the first, Adam Vinatieri, Inevitable, and Janikowski – I think as well. He'll be there. It's great credit to his long career and one of the strongest legs I've ever seen.
And whose name's Sebastian and isn't cool? Let's just go with that.
Well, he's got that going for him.
That
he does. All right, we've covered a lot of ground, and we will return to wrap up some NFL talk. You're listening to The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Well, Ron, you will attest to this. I am sitting next to a Fergie apologist, a woman who loves Fergie and is standing by Fergie after the national anthem. Are you not? You're still a fan.
I'm still a fan, and I just want to say that even though it was not a good rendition last night, she did stick the landing. She was so happy at the end, and I just love that reference. But she has now come out, and I just want to give Fergie some props here. She is addressing now this anthem criticism, and she says, quote, This rendition did not strike the intended tone.
It did not strike the intended tone.
And good for her to just come out and say it. Just address it.
Sure. No, I guess when it goes south like that, you just got to acknowledge what happened.
I respect her for that. And, you know, like part of my love for Fergie Kent, she's a very devout Catholic. I have been in Mass in L.A., and she and Josh Duhamel, her husband, are there in the congregation.
Ron, do you want to weigh in on this?
I mean, you know, I'm glad that she's taking the L. Sometimes you just got to take the L.
Exactly. I mean, she didn't try and make excuses.
I don't think it was
excuses.
A great version at all.
No, I know.
I mean, earlier I was comparing it. I would almost say it was worse than Roseanne Barr's rendition.
Ooh!
The reason why is because she was trying where we know Roseanne was not.
Well, I know, but I found Roseanne sort of offensive, whereas
no, she was extremely offensive. I'm not
right.
I'm just saying as far as the singing quality went.
Sure.
Or the choice of way to sing. It's because Roseanne did not care at all. That's where I put, like, you know, if I was an American Idol judge, I'd be sitting there going, she was too pitchy, dog.
Well, here, we're going to go to break in just a second, but I do think I'll give a radio tease. Maybe we can get Carla Dawson to sing the national anthem. Just a few lines tonight.
Oh, good gosh.
It would
this
be a
talking voice. Can you even
huge
imagine?
Moment.
Woo. I don't know. Take
all
a
right.
sip on that one.
You're listening to The Boss on the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.